Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. In March, South Dakota's first case of COVID-19 was confirmed by the State Department of Health. In those early days of the pandemic, South Dakotans kept a wary eye on news of overwhelmed ICUs and emergency departments in cities like New York and Detroit. Governor Kristi Noem called for the closure of school buildings. Local hospitals scrambled to prepare for a potential South Dakota COVID-19 surge. For the first time, many Americans thought deeply about the capacity of our healthcare system, the inadequacies and politics of the federal stockpile of ventilators and personal protective equipment for healthcare workers. We found the system to be inadequate to the challenge of the pandemic at hand. Now, fast forward to mid-April. The Smithfield Pork Processing Plant in Sioux Falls becomes the center of a new drama. Before the dust settles, more than 840 Smithfield employees and their close contacts will test positive for the virus. The plant will close as it becomes the largest cluster of COVID-19 cases in the nation. Two employees will die from the disease. Today, most of the Smithfield families have recovered. The plant has reopened. Other processing plants and factories are working to contain other outbreaks of coronavirus disease. Of course, that's not the whole story, because when the Sioux Falls Smithfield plant shuttered, hog producers had nowhere to take their animals to slaughter. Those animals kept growing, kept gaining weight. Hogs and cattle and chicken don't slow down just because the system has a glitch. Within days, producers were faced with the unthinkable: what to do with hundreds of animals, all because of the temporary stoppage of one processing plant. Many South Dakotans discovered limits on meat purchases at the grocery store and threats of greater shortages ahead. We found the food supply chain to be inadequate to the pandemic at hand. Next week, SDPB brings you a look at a supply chain broken. We hear from industry representatives, Smithfield workers, farmers and producers, and consumers about a nationwide awakening to where our food comes from and how easily the American dinner plate can come crashing to the floor. You'll hear reporting from SDPB's Seth Tupper, Lee Strubinger, Jackie Hendry, and Melissa Hammersmith-Severs. We'll talk about the history of the conflict between ranchers and packers, a dispute at least as old as statehood, and we'll hear about an awakening for workers' welfare and protection, calls for federal action, and innovation from resourceful and resilient South Dakotans finding ways to rethink where their meat comes from. It's a conversation that could have implications for decades to come, or it could fade away, and we could end up no better off than we were before. Tune in next week to In the Moment for a special series on the food supply chain. Until then, a montage of voices from In the Moment conversations recently with perspective on the problem. You'll hear from rancher and congressional candidate Liz May, pork producers Shane Odegaard and Jim Petrick, Nancy Reynosa, leader of KPASA Sioux Falls, Cooper Carraway with the Sioux Falls AFL-CIO, U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, rancher and author Eliza Blue, and immigrant attorney Tanisa Islam.
Well, I think the easiest way for the consumers to understand it is we have four major packers in the United States that control 85% of the beef processing. And so, and I might add that two of those are foreign-owned. And so when you don't have any competition in the marketplace, this is what happens when, you know, say COVID-19, but this also happened back in August, if you remember the Holcomb fire in Kansas that started in one of the plants, and I think it burned 1,200 square feet, and it absolutely took the cattle market and just tipped it upside down. And so it is so fragile, and we've seen this, and we've been warning about this for years and years and years.
The pork production in our facilities today are designed on a continuous flow basis, and so for every pig that goes to market, there's one being born. And so with this hiccup, with me not being able to market pigs, I got a barn right now that's got roughly 900 head in it that need to go to market that are at market weight, and I also got pigs that are born that will need that barn for a home here in 2 weeks or less. And so if any hiccup in the flow, I am running up against a problem right now that I don't know what to do with these pigs. I mean, if I can't sell them, we're going to have to make some really, really hard decisions here on the farm.
What are the options?
It's really
a double-edged sword,
Lori. This is Jim again, but it's really a double-edged sword because consumers are going to feel it from the standpoint of less product being available in the supermarkets. But for the producers, it's even going to be more challenging because, like Shane said, at some point in time, you know, I hope we don't get to that fork in the road, but maybe at some point in time, you know, we'll have to euthanize baby pigs or something just because there won't be a barn to put them in that's available or something, you know?
A lot of them did report them to the union, and a lot of them started, like I said, they called a lot of people in the community that they know that they feel comfortable with telling their story because they didn't want their name to be put out there. They still love their jobs. They still need their jobs, and all they were wanting from us is, can you do something to make sure that we're protected while we're working? And so they started to call a lot of different people that work in the community to help the immigrant community. And that's when we formed the South Dakota Dream Coalition so that we could together get all of these text messages and messages we were getting and phone calls we were getting, put them all in one place where we can actually try to do something with that and let the community know this is what's happening, this is what the employees are saying.
I believe as soon as the plant has the ability to be fully operational, it's going to be fully operational, and it's very likely that these mines are going to be moving faster than they were before they shut down. You know, the CEOs have done a good job at creating a narrative of scarcity and of a need to get things out on the shelves very rapidly and quickly. And so I think that once they have the ability to, the lines are going to be, you know, running faster probably than they were before the plant shut down.
I don't think we can go back to business as usual. We need consumers to recognize that this is in their better interest to know what the where their food comes from, how secure it is, and the availability of it in the times of another national emergency. The packer concentration is a legitimate concern for our producers in South Dakota. Right now, the bigger problem we've got, about more than 80% of the market is controlled by four packers. Two of those packers are actually controlled by international or non-U.S. organizations, and they're bringing in beef from other countries such as Brazil. And part of it is they own a lot of that beef when they bring it in. And so the packer concentration is one part of it. The vertical integration where it is controlled by the packer to begin with. So if the prices start to go up on beef in the United States, they simply bring in more of their own beef and drop the price back down again as they refuse to participate in that cash market at your local barns. So that's part of the issue here. And for me, it's the reason why back in March I sent a letter to the Justice Department saying enough is enough. Look, the market is broken. You need to do an investigation as to whether or not these packers are in violation of the antitrust laws that have been in place. And so, first of all, if you're I was joined at that time by three different senators on the same letter. Now we've got over 18 senators that we've joined together on another letter since then asking for the same thing. The president has now joined on asking for this investigation, whether or not the packers have been involved in antitrust activity. And furthermore, my first letter said if they have not been involved in it, if the laws have not been violated, then there's something wrong with the laws. And we have to go back in and fix the laws because the market is broken. And if we don't fix it, we're going to have producers that are going to go broke. And what we lose then is the ability to produce our own food in the United States, and we will be relying on food coming in from outside sources. We can't let that happen. That has got to be recognized.
There are some real issues and fragility in our current system, and those of us working in this field, we have been experiencing that for a while, but it hadn't yet trickled out, I think, to the greater population, so it wasn't as obvious. First of all, there's some great organizations that already exist that are doing great work, like Dakota Resources and Dakota Rural Action, and I just hope they continue to gain traction. So if this is a topic you're interested in, those are great organizations to look into. Similarly, I mean, there's already a lot of people sort of working to promote farmers markets, doing direct marketing of products that are created in South Dakota and making it so that there is a local supply chain as well. And so I hope that those movements will continue to spread, because I do think that just in general, raising awareness is like an important first step. And then from there, I mean, there's a lot of people to get fed, basically. So I think that the supply chain is going to be longer than just you show up in someone's yard and they hand you some meat or like some vegetables. So I think, but there's going to be, I hope anyway, at least a little bit more diversity and more options for consumers. And that though, because there will be more options, that will lead to resilience.
In South Dakota, 70% of COVID positive cases have ravaged immigrant, refugee, and communities of color. 70% of COVID positive cases in South Dakota. And so it is a very different story based on who you are. I've seen comments, you know, even elected officials saying it's really, you know, not impacting us here in South Dakota like it is everywhere else. Well, I would argue it's impacting communities of color severely in South Dakota. And so it's really important to understand that and to understand the trauma that our communities of color are facing because of this and the lack of assistance and awareness and action that's taking place from elected officials to assist these particular communities here.
In order, those are voices of Liz May, Shane Odegaard and Jim Petrick, Nancy Reynosa, Cooper Caraway, U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, Eliza Blue, and Tanisa Islam. Tune in next week for a week-long series from South Dakota Public Broadcasting about the troubles with the food supply chain. We'll take a break. When we come back, U.S. Senate candidate Skylar Borglum. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio.